Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another recap of the C Squared podcast here for the World Championship match between Ding and Gukesh. And going into the third round, this is the third round, Ding was ahead. He won the first one, drew the second one, and right now Gukesh finally, for the second time, he was going to have the white pieces, with which he did get a slight advantage out of the opening in the last game. So, very interesting and intriguing moment. We didn't know what to expect. Fabi, first of all, good morning. What did you expect without spoiling anything? Because we have to, you know, keep our audience in suspense. What did you expect and what happened in today's game?
Let the game begin.
Yeah, well, I guess no spoilers. We can go through the moves in that case.
Yes.
Because I can't say much about the game without spoiling it, right? I mean, what can I say?
I don't know. You got to get creative. You can give minimal spoilers.
There's really not much to... It was an interesting game. It was an exciting affair. Is that what you want to hear?
Beautiful. All right. So let's go through the game.
So Gukesh was white in this game, as we already know. He was down a point in the match. I guess we could spoil the first game.
Yes. I said that. Yes.
So he's down a point in the match. And yeah, it's, of course, quite important when you have the white pieces to try to fight back. So he played d4. First move was already not going to be easy to predict. Knight f6. Knight f3. Kind of unusual move order. I mean, could be sort of anti-Grunfeld to start with knight f3. Not sure exactly why, because after e6, after d5, he played c4 anyway. So it's a bit of a weird move order to start with knight f3, but didn't really end up changing anything because d5, c4, e6, we go back into a kind of typical territory. And Gukesh plays, I don't know if it's an unpredictable move. Like, the point of this is that, okay, he can play the Catalan. Gukesh plays Catalan often. If he plays knight c3, which he played very, very often in the past, the problem is, of course, that the kind of Tarish lines after c5, whatever new Tarish state, whatever it's called, basically white has no real ideas or tries. So knight c3 is sort of out of the question these days. Mm-hmm. g3 is predictable. So Gukesh plays c takes d5.
A bit of a surprise.
Kind of. I mean, I've like looked in this direction very often as an attempt to get a game, because at least here, like, you get a Carlsbad structure and the position doesn't simplify. While after knight c3, c5, the position kind of simplifies along theoretical paths. While here, there's not much you can really, like, you can't prepare it super deeply because the structure is fixed.
Yeah.
Still, the theory has developed here as well. I mean, I've played many times this position, knight c3, c6, and for example, I played quite a number of games against strong players with bishop f4. For example, I played this against Fedoseev in World Rapid Championship. I played this against Arjun in Blitz, and I played queen c2 against Ariantari, mm-hmm. which is what Gukesh did. He played queen c2.
Yes.
So Ding knew something, probably like vaguely, like, I don't think he knew much, but he knew vaguely something about the position. I think he said that he didn't really know anything, but he played g6 relatively quickly. I mean, he probably had some generic knowledge. After g6, I think my game against Arjun was bishop g5. I played that. Here, Gukesh played a rare move, h3, which certainly at this point, Ding was a bit more taken by surprise, but Black's next move was pretty clear. g6 was to prepare bishop f5.
Right.
I mean, one of the points of this Carlsbad is that the bishop on c8 can either be a problem piece because it doesn't have anywhere to go, or on f5, it's a very good piece. That's like one of Black's main issues, is do you get your bishop to f5 or not? So that's why he played g6, h3, bishop f5.
And usually on f5, white is already prepared to go bishop to d3. In this case, that's not the case because the pawn is not yet on e3. And generally, it's considered if black manages to exchange light square bishops, then generally he doesn't have too many problems left, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. Normally, white would like to get a setup where white has already developed a bishop outside the pawn chain, bishop g5, for example, e3, and bishop d3 before black has played bishop f5.
Yeah.
Which can happen from like a traditional Carlsbad move order, But from this move order, it's very difficult for white to achieve that. So that's why he played queen c2, just try to stop bishop f5, but it's a bit artificial. He lost time with the queen. Queen to b3, this is all, of course, Gyokeş's preparation. Queen to b6.
Did you say that Gyokeş was saying that he's already out of his prep?
No, Ding said that. Gyokeş, clearly, he prepared the line. I mean, like, if you prepare cd5, c6 is the main move, what Ding played, queen c2, g6 is the main move, what Ding played, and after h3, of course, bishop f5 is the main move, queen b3, queen b6 is the main move. So Gyokeş was still in preparation. I checked it a bit with, like, a relatively powerful engine, and it's reasonable for white. Like, after g4, which is what he played, which was certainly his preparation, I think, like, some engines like to just play bishop to e6, which is reasonable. I mean, you can say, okay, you've lost some time with the bishop. On the other hand, white lost some time with the queen. And also g4 is potentially weakening, potentially a good move. It's a bit hard to say. So bishop e6 is an option. Ding played very critically after quite some thought. He took on b3, take, and bishop c2. So he's attacking the pawn on b3. Mm-hmm. And the issue is that after Gyokeş's move, bishop to f4, it's not really good to take this pawn. First of all, because there is very often, like, bishop takes b8 stuff, but after bishop takes b3, there's this knight d2, bishop c2, and then rook c1. And the bishop is getting trapped on c2. Mm-hmm. So you can't really take the pawn, which doesn't mean that black did anything wrong, but it means that it's not super easy for black here. Now, black has many fine moves. Ding played h5, which is maybe not the best move, but it's okay. It's still fine.
I mean it's very natural, right? It's a natural move because you really want to get that bishop out. Like, that's your problem piece. You kind of understand that. And you're always cognizant about the fact that that piece might get trapped, as you just pointed out with that 92 variation.
Yeah, it's not a bad move by any means. It just leads to a change in structure. H5, rook g1, as Gyokeş played, take on g4. And then we have this position where the h-file gets opened. But I'm not sure it's really to black's favor because, as we'll see soon, black's rook went away from h8. So it's not like black is really using the h-file. And so, that's what happened. Knight b to d7, knight to d2. Gyokeş prepares rook c1 by defending the pawn on b3. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now rook c1 is a huge threat. Of course, black has to save the bishop, and that's why Ding played rook to g8, with the idea that if rook c1, g5 comes. It's like an intermediate move, and then after the bishop drops back, then the black's bishop can go back to
g6 or
to safety.
Yeah,
I think, like, it's kind of concrete if we look at, I mean, the commentators were analyzing this entirely, like rook c1, g5, bishop e3, and then bishop to e4, because you want to avoid knight f3. This was sort of what I was watching, like, Judith and Robert Hess, and they were first looking at, like, the pawn sack, bishop h7, knight f3, and so on, and then they found this move, bishop to e4, which at first Judith was very skeptical, but then I think, like, within 5 seconds, she was like, oh, this is the right move. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so that makes sense.
So it looks like probably this is where Gyokeş was putting his attention, because I think basically the first thing you calculate is rook c1, g5 is the only move, and bishop to e3, because bishop g5, rook g5 leads to a simplification, rook c2, rook g4, and so on. So obviously Gyokeş is trying to prove an advantage here, not trying to equalize. Mm-hmm. So he was looking that direction. He couldn't find anything after bishop e4. I think that is generally correct, that it is equal after bishop to e4. Like, strong engine will show basically zeros, which doesn't... I saw some people complaining that I'm giving computer evaluations. Basically, I mean, I understand 0, 0, 0 is not a helpful evaluation, just to basically give the impression that...
I don't think you cannot take every single comment in good faith. I mean, some people will like it, some people will don't. I think we have our special way of doing things, you know. There's a lot of recaps out there, and all of them have different styles, I would say. Wouldn't you say so?
No, I'm not defending ourselves. I'm just trying to explain why this evaluation can also be helpful, because we're looking at what Gyokeş was thinking, and his thought process is going to, like, in a relatively simple position like this, with clarity, it's going to be pretty close to computer's evaluation. Like, he's not going to perform much worse than an engine. in a very complicated position than a human will, of course, perform very poorly compared to an engine. But this is relatively simple logical play, like rook c1 forces this. After bishop b3, bishop b4, you can all fight all these moves logically. So Gukesh was looking in that direction. I'm kind of assuming, but I think with the high likelihood that that is correct. And then he didn't find anything, which is also correct because he's not finding anything. Computer's not finding anything. We know that it's an equal position.
Yeah.
But still, his move wasn't really correct. He was trying to find an ambitious solution because he didn't see anything in that direction. So he played g5. The issue is that after g5, it's kind of anti-positional and it's also leading perhaps to a worse position for white.
Okay. So big moment right here.
Yeah, g5. But on the other hand, sometimes bad moves, like slightly bad moves, it's not a terrible move, slightly dubious moves can also not be bad decisions. I mean, he is trying to keep the position relatively tense, and also Ding was spending a lot of time, so he's trying to put the pressure on the clock.
Yeah.
Knight h5, bishop h2. Now, of course, the good thing for black is that the bishop on c2 can escape anytime it wants on f5. Rook h8. Ding took the file again. Okay, he wasted some time, but on the other hand, we're not counting tempi here. I mean, yeah, he spent two moves to get the rook back to its starting square, but still, he has the h file again. Knight on h5 is pretty well placed. It can go back to g7, e6 eventually. The bishop on c2 is safe for now. After rook h8, Gukesh plays f3, which signals his intention that he still wants to trap the bishop on c2. He wants to play e4, and then the bishop is trapped again. Knight to g7, a nice kind of intermediate move, you could say, attacking the bishop, bishop to g3. Everything's going great for Ding so far, but clock is a bit iffy. He's about 30 minutes, and Gukesh about, not quite an hour more, but close to an hour more. And after bishop g3, so here's what, like, I think black could reasonably do. One very reasonable move after bishop g3 is bishop to f5. You just want to save the bishop. After e4, you play bishop b6. You spend a lot of time. On the other hand, white has enormous amount of weaknesses, so it's not like you spent all this time for nothing. I mean, you did provoke a lot of weaknesses in white's position.
Yeah.
And after bishop to e6, e d5, for example, I mean, black can capture both ways, but bishop takes e5 is a good way, just to stop any knight b5 ideas. And black is on the slightly better side of an equal position, but slightly better, you know, just because white's pawns are weak.
Yeah.
Now, an even more accurate move is bishop e7 first, and if rook c1, bishop f5, it's kind of similar. And if e4, then bishop takes g5. And yeah, white can try to trap this bishop, but it doesn't quite work out because there's bishop takes d2 and so on.
So what if and you take wait a minute. What if you take on f5?
Sorry, what?
What if you take on f5 after bishop g5?
Take on f5.
Yeah, I thought you said the rook c1, bishop f5, e4, bishop takes g5.
Oh, no, I meant like rook c1, bishop f5, e4, there's bishop b6. I just kind of stopped that variation. This is just fine. I mean, I meant bishop b7, e4.
Got it.
Like trying to trap the bishop on c2, because of course you can chase it back, but then you don't trap it.
Yeah.
No, like e4 is more ambitious, but now there's bishop g5, and rook c1, there's bishop takes d2. So you're not getting the bishop on c2.
That's right.
Although it still remains kind of sharp. It's not like black is winning or anything. I mean, white can take on d5, so on and so forth. So these were two good options for black. Ding chose a third option, which is not really an option. It's also a very bad move, and I have no idea what he was thinking. He played the move relatively quickly, so my only assumption is that he just missed Gukesh's response entirely. Well, like, he probably thought Gukesh...
I think you made a very good point in the first recap when you said that you've seen this very often from Ding. Whenever he gets low on time, especially with no increment, he starts not necessarily panicking, but he's very cognizant about it, and he plays fast, try to stay ahead. At this point, you just told us he's down almost an hour on the clock. It kind of makes sense, at least from his tendencies, to try to speed up at the expense of, you know, quality of moves.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense to speed up. And if you think about it, he has about 30 minutes for 22 moves after bishop g3, and there's no increment. So he's basically playing close to a minute a move. I mean, he's, you know, if he takes one more long thing, and I count a long thing as 5 minutes, then he's going to have to play a minute a move for the rest of the game. Not for the rest of the game, until the time control. But I said that it's good to play reasonable moves quickly, like maybe not optimal moves, but reasonable moves that don't spoil your position. Rook h5 is not a reasonable move. And I mean, I understand he probably just thought rook c1, bishop f5, e4, bishop e6, and so on. Or maybe he thought white would try to defend the g5 pawn with bishop f2. But like somehow alarm bells should be ringing in your head because your bishop's on c2 and white has played f3. And although maybe it's not the first move you think of, like maybe it doesn't come to mind in 2 seconds, it should probably come to mind in 20 seconds.
Has to be e4, right?
Yeah, that like e4 is at least a critical move. And I don't know. My assumption is that he just didn't consider it, because if you start to consider it, I guess you get very scared, just because like it doesn't look obvious that it's super strong, but it looks dangerous. I mean, you can calculate it a bit and then you feel like, well, there's easier things to do than this. I don't want to get caught up in this mess, even if somehow it ends up being okay for black, which it doesn't. Because, okay, after e4, black will lose a piece, but he can play like knight e6, rook c1, knight takes d4, bishop f2. So you do lose a piece because the knight gets overloaded. And then I think they were looking at positions like bishop c5, take, rook moves to g2. And then black starts to like collect a few pawns for the piece, but you're down a piece. And there's no way that you see e4 and then think, let's go for it. So I assume he just didn't see e4. But this is really not good because,
yeah,
I mean, it's just a move that has to be considered.
It's a very natural move.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your bishop's on c2. Like you've been playing basically the entire game with the ghost of the possibility that the bishop gets trapped.
Yeah.
And then when you finally get your opportunity to either play bishop f5 or tactically to solve the issue with bishop b7. But I would never criticize if he played bishop f5. It might not be an optimal move, but to me it's a very human, fine solution for black.
Yeah.
Rook h5, e4, just kind of disastrous. Even if maybe black can survive down a piece somehow, you are now in the camp where it's a two-result game. White can only win or draw. Because of course it can be technical, like you can get a bunch of pawns, you're down a piece, but it's simplified. White has very few pawns left. It can be very hard to win those positions, but it's already 50-50 territory. Like with great defense, you probably hold. But with any more mistakes in this game, you probably lose.
Yeah, no. So at this point, the pressure is on for sure.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, and the g5 pawn doesn't matter because rook g5 doesn't actually save your bishop with rook c1. I mean, you got a pawn, and that's it. So d takes e4, he played. It's a mistake. Fe4. The reason it's a mistake, we'll actually see in the game. So fe4, knight e6, rook c1, knight d4, bishop f2. We already saw this position with the pawns on d5 and f3.
Exactly.
And then bishop g7. Bishop c5 is maybe like slightly better option, but the point is that very often black is trying to sacrifice the knight on f3, with the pawns included in the position d5 and f3, and then you also get the f3 pawn and the e4 pawn.
Mm-hmm.
And now bishop g7, Gukesh finds a very good move, which is the only move to like keep an advantage, but it's also close to a winning move, which is the move knight to e2. Rather than taking the piece, take, rook g2, and then we would see an even better version for black of the piece sacrifice, take, and bishop to e3, because you also get the g5 pawn. And this is probably what Ding was sort of counting on. Three pawns is enough, especially with obscure bishops and a very strong dark square bishop.
Yeah.
But instead, Gukesh plays knight to e2 after bishop g7, which, again, the problem now is that there's no knight takes f3 because you traded off those pawns. So knight f3 would not be capturing anything.
It's just a full piece.
For two pawns. While in the other version, black would have gotten three pawns, which, of course, is a big difference. So knight takes b3, rook c2, knight d2, king d2. And now black has two pawns for the piece, which is simply not enough. And I would say, objectively, this is a technically winning position for white. Like, if we had two engines playing, I would assume white would win
10 out of 10.
The vast majority of the time.
Yeah.
Now, it's not easy in human terms, but the other issue for Ding is that he's down, again, not down as much time as before, but relatively speaking, he's down even more time because Gukesh has almost an hour. And Ding has 20 minutes, so Gukesh is up 40 minutes. It might seem like, yeah, that's better than before, but on the other hand, It doesn't matter if your opponent is down to 30 minutes or 20 minutes when you're two moves away from the time patrol, because you're already there and you're not in the real time crunch. While 19 minutes for 15 moves, that's the real time crunch, because you can reasonably assume that Ding will get down to less than 5 minutes before making the time patrol. That's a very reasonable assumption. So it's the relative time difference is pretty serious here. Knight to e5, threatening knight f3. Kukeps plays knight d4. Knight d4, excellent move. Not the only excellent move, but still an excellent one. Defending against knight to f3. And after rook d8, king to e2, another excellent move. I think very natural moves, but still he is playing very well. This just stops any knight to f3 ideas, and the bishop on f1 will now develop to g2 most likely. Rook to h2. Bishop g2, I think another excellent move, although, again, there are good moves like knight to f3, for example. Rook g2 is what, like, I think Judith and Hess were mainly looking at. Rook h3, and it didn't look super easy. But Kukesh has a very simple solution, bishop g2. Stops the rook takes d4 threat. The rook on h2 now, it's kind of semi-active. It's doing something, but it can't go anywhere, so it's only semi-active.
Can and the problem back here, after bishop g3, right?
Yeah, there are some possibilities in the future, once the knight on d4 gets removed, that bishop g3 becomes an option. And knight to g4, the problem for black is knight to f3, attacks the rook on h2. So that would otherwise be pretty decent for black. Mm-hmm. So now Ding has no ideas. The knight on e5 can move, bishop on g7 doesn't want to move, rook on d8 has no better square, rook on h2 can only go backwards. So that's why Ding plays a6, just getting the pawn off a hanging square. But Gukesh has a similar idea. He plays b3. I saw that Hammer called this a mysterious move, which is a mysterious comment to me, because I don't know, like the pawn on b2 is potentially hanging. On b3, it's not potentially hanging. It's just not on a dark square. So seems like a really reasonable move. And also in some cases...
Also doesn't allow the knight to jump to c4. Very often you want to go rook d2.
Sometimes.
No knight c4.
Yeah. Actually, this is an interesting moment, because the rook on would like to get to the d file, so rook c2 to d2, but there is knight g4 ideas, which you have to be cognizant about. So we'll see that Gukesh is trying to get the rook there, but in a slightly safer way. Mm. So rook d7, Ding is still waiting. Rook 2 to c1.
That's a nice way to try to go to d1.
Yeah, exactly. On d1, it's more stable because the rooks are connected. On d2, the rook is kind of semi-hanging. Right. So another excellent move, king to e7. Now, it looks like Ding is doing something, but he's actually not doing something. His pieces are not improving. King on e8 or e7, that's the issue with his position. His pieces cannot improve, while white's pieces can, which is always a very bad sign when your pieces are ideally placed and still you can't create ideas. So king to e7, rook c to d1. Now again, knight to g4, there's knight to f3, and then if rook takes d1, there's bishop c5 check. So the king on e7 wasn't even better placed. It was perhaps even worse placed. That's why Ding goes back to e8, but this is a very bad sign. Very bad sign. Also, he's down to less than 2 minutes, I think, at this point, for 9 moves, which already means... Like, I got annoyed at people for saying the first game that Ding would flag. But, yeah, like, that was unreasonable, because he had an hour and a half. Now it's reasonable to say maybe he'll flag, because he has 2 minutes.
We literally just got called out on Twitter on that.
It's very funny. Yeah, I mean... If someone is a complete idiot, they might conflate a situation where someone has 1.5 hours to a situation where someone has 1.5 minutes. But you really would have to be kind of a complete idiot. So, if someone wants to to show that on Twitter, that's of course their prerogative. But these are different situations. So anyway, after c to d1, Ding realized that there's bishop c5 check potentially, which is why he played king d8. He actually played it with a smile. I was watching like most of his game live, because I woke up super early this morning, which it wasn't a happy smile. It was more a smile like, I literally can't make any moves besides moving back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's not happy for him, but it's in some ways a little bit comical in a slightly dark way.
Right.
So king e8, bishop g3 came. Now, because the rook was on d1, as you mentioned, bishop g3 is an idea, because now the knight on d4 is defended. So now rook takes g2, rook g2. The knight on d4 cannot be captured, so white would simply be a piece up. That's why Ding went to h5. Now, another very nice move from Gukesh, knight to f3, because at this point, White wants to open up the position to attack Black's king. And the way we do that is by trading off the rook on d7, and then there are actually mating ideas on the back rank. Like if rook takes d1, rook takes d1, knight f3, bishop f3, rook g5, looks like you want a pawn, but there's bishop h4. And if the rook moves, rook d8 checkmate, which means that Black loses that rook and loses the game.
Yeah.
So after knight f3, it's already to the point where, I don't know, can Black even resist anymore? It's not, obviously Black is objectively losing, but can he even resist? Probably not with 2 minutes. Maybe there could be some people who under the right circumstances could put up resistance here, but you would have to dig really deep. I think the engine shows rook d1, rook d1, knight d7, which makes sense because at least the bishop on g2 doesn't get active, so you don't get completely destroyed immediately by the bishop pair. I mean, you're losing, but you can... There are still survival possibilities. I would say like maybe 10 to 15% with the right, with someone who's like really on in good form.
Maybe something
which like is not
knight c5, knight e6 in the future, try target.
Yeah, upon exactly.
g5, bishop f8, bishop e7. If you manage to stabilize and not allow the bishops to get alive, then maybe you have a chance because you have a pretty healthy pawn structure.
Yeah, to survive this one, I think you basically have to find rook d1, rook d1, knight d7 instantly without thinking whatsoever. So you keep 2 minutes on the clock. And then maybe Gukesh starts to think, and your hope is that he also gets down to time trouble because they still have a few moves to go, like 5 moves to go after that. And in time trouble, anything could happen. But you basically have to make computer first line moves instantly, which I don't know if anyone's capable of that. Like, I don't know, Magnus on a good day could perhaps fight for survival here. Hikaru on a good day. I think like on a very good day, I could perhaps fight for survival, probably lose, but still fight for survival. But I would also imagine that in the vast majority of cases, I would, and probably most of the best players in the world, would lose this within 5 moves. So after knight to f3, Ding took on f3. I think he was maybe counting on bishop takes f3, but king takes f3 happened. Excellent move again from Gukesh. And I say that because Ding looked slightly surprised by king f3, but I might be reading too much into body language. Maybe he wasn't. The problem is, again, that rook d1, rook d1, rook g5, we already saw. There's bishop h4. And if rook g5 immediately, there's rook takes d7. I actually clicked out of the game by mistake, but okay. Rook d7,
king d7,
king d7, bishop h3, and again the bishops are just destroying you. Like rook d1 comes as well. You just don't survive this.
Yeah, you have to go to e8, and then you just d1. Yeah.
The bishops are just destroying you. There's bishop d7, and so on and so forth. I mean, still, maybe this is the best hope for Black, like to go for this, because what happened instead, which I'm not even gonna blame him for, because he has a minute left. Like, he's at this point, even not flagging is going to be a challenge.
He needs to make decisions, and he needs to do them fast.
Yeah. The issue with bishop d4, which is what he played, is that after white moves the rook, basically anywhere, if you take on g5, bishop h3 is even stronger, because now the rook on d7 can't even trade itself off.
Yeah.
So you just get that rook attacked, which is what happened. Rook h1, rook g5, bishop to h3. Now, if the rook goes back, there's bishop h4. Or probably bishop c7 too. I guess everything.
Everything.
So f5, and then bishop to f4, which Gukesh found very quickly. I mean, these are not difficult tactics, but still, he was finding things really quickly and calculating well. And in general, it was a great game. Bishop to f4, with the final idea that rook to h5, bishop takes f5 comes, which is why white didn't trade first, because now the rook can't capture because the pawn. If g takes f5, rook h5 is upper rook, and if rook h1, bishop d7 intermediate check with the rook up as well. So I think that Ding played rook h5 while flanking, like he flagged before he completed the move, but it changes nothing. I mean, it's over. Bishop f5 is resigned. So he would have resigned either after bishop f5 or he flagged, which is basically the same thing. Yeah, excellent game from Gukesh overall. Only one slightly questionable decision, g5. But I wouldn't criticize it too much. I mean, it's questionable from an objective point of view, but practically it wasn't terrible, and it did lead to a win. For Ding, it was a story of like one serious, but not just one serious mistake. His time spending rook h5, lack of danger with the bishop on c2, missing e4. Not ideal. I mean, it wasn't like he had so many objective mistakes. It was mainly rook h5, and to some extent d takes e4. But rook h5 is such a terrible mistake that it's not a good game overall, I would say, from Ding's point of view. From Gukesh, of course, excellent game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Gukesh is showing once again, and he did that countless of times before. We've seen it during the candidates. Also, I think quite infamous, his post-tournament speech. He said that he felt the best after losing to Ali Reza. I don't know exactly why, but that's obviously a very good mentality to have when you can come back so effectively after you lose a game. This is exactly what he did. He did it early, so he's not feeling the pressure. Sure, at the beginning, you can sort of afford losing a game and still not feeling as much pressure because you know you have so many games ahead. But getting it back immediately with the white pieces, that's definitely a good sign for Gukesh. Also, now he's introducing a new first move. Ding, probably, I don't know what he had in store against e4, whether he was going to repeat the French or not. But now we're starting to get a much more thorough and complete picture of what these players have prepared for the match. So it's getting interesting. I'm very excited to see what Ding is going to come up in the next round with the white pieces. He got something out of the opening yesterday, but he didn't feel like he was interested in doing much with, which was a bit strange because obviously, you know, white pieces in a world championship match are quite valuable. So it felt like he could have done more. Now, at the same time...
Yeah, I actually thought that was very weird as well. Like, I really didn't understand why after Gukesh played h5, like, neither side is in time trouble. Ding has full time on the clock. He's playing with the white pieces.
That's the yesterday game, yes.
Yeah. The second round. Like, after h5... H5 doesn't do anything, right? I mean, it's like H5 is a passing move. You play H4, and then you ask your opponent, like, still, you have to make a decision. Like, you can just play H4 instantly, and you put the pressure back on your opponent. And you don't risk. So I didn't understand what's Nd2, Nc6, Nc3. I mean, yeah, of course, you can kind of repeat moves. It doesn't make any sense. It's more or less like, I don't want to play, so I offer you this repetition. Because, of course, Black doesn't even have to repeat. Black can play H4, but Black has no reason to not repeat because, I mean, it's kind of a slightly better position for White. Like, the structure is such that the c5 pawn is a bit weak, so White has a bit more space with the pawn on a5, so it's not entirely symmetrical.
Yeah.
So after h5, you just play h4, and then you ask your opponent, okay, you played h5, so I understand it's not a bad move, but it doesn't really do anything. I'll make the same move, and then I still have my ideas, which are to defend the c2 pawn, play Nd3, attack your weak pawns. It's not going to be easy to attack because also c2 is weak, b3 is weak, and so on. But after h4, it's not like Black has active ideas. There's no risk. I mean, I felt we didn't recap the game because it was a bit uneventful, and also I was traveling yesterday, but it just felt weird to me. I didn't understand this. It's not, I wouldn't say bad sign. I wouldn't read too much into it, but...
This is sort of what we were mostly concerned about Ding going into this match, right? Just making some decisions that are not typical of him, but typical of any very strong player. So anybody, I would say, from the top 20, anybody playing a world championship match at that point would have tried for more, getting that type of slight pull out of the opening. And I think also Magnus mentioned it on his recap that he generally didn't get much out of the opening, nothing comparable to that. Like, he would have been happy if he was going to get that out of the opening, and he was a bit surprised as well. It's just, let's see what happens after the rest day. Tomorrow it's a rest day. Ding comes back with the white pieces after tomorrow. I'm hoping also to see a much more combative Ding. We'll see how he handles the loss, but obviously this is a very, very good sign and a very good game for Gukesh fully back in this one, fully back as, I would say, the favorite in this match.
Yeah, I would, I mean, probably a favorite. Like, if we call him a favorite before the match, I don't think anything negative has happened in these first three games from Gukesh's point of view overall. And so, yeah, again, it's still early days and the match is tied. It's not like super dramatic things have happened yet. But, okay, a win is good. A win is very good. And to, I mean, if I were in Gukesh's position, I would be feeling much better not trailing. Just because you don't have to create so much. I mean, okay, lost in the first round, really, it's probably the best time to lose because you have so much time to go. But I would just be more comfortable. At least I don't have to like worry about it. Okay, draws, you know, if you accumulate draws when you're down, then you feel the pressure. Like I always felt the pressure in candidates if I was like trailing.
Exactly.
And then I'm drawing, it feels like every draw is a missed opportunity.
Exactly.
So Now that you're equal in the match, every draw does not, like, he doesn't feel any pressure. Like with the black pieces, next game, he won't think, oh, I need to create chances. You know, it's just back to status quo.
Go ahead.
No, I think that, like, Ding really does need to create chances. I mean, you can't just hope that with the black pieces you get chances like in game one. With white, you should be doing something as well. And I thought his opening choice was pretty nice. Like, he did get a pleasant position. A5 was a bit weird, like, preparation. But okay, it kind of worked out all right. Still, I was, like, analyzing it. A5 felt weird to me, but I guess there was some prep involved.
Yeah.
And then, he got a pleasant endgame, which, again, it's not much. It's not like you're definitely not thinking that I'm going to win because I got this endgame, right? It's just more or less equal, but yeah, on the more pleasant side of it. But that's actually a pretty good endgame. Like, it feels good to play because you know that your opponent starts to feel some like minor pressure and it's simplified. It's not easy to like clarify matters. And also there's a slight humiliation factor. Like, okay, I play in the most simple way and I'm maybe going to beat you like this, you know, that those thoughts also enter people's minds. Like, okay, I shouldn't be losing this simple position, which is not always a simple position. Sometimes very deceptively simple, and it's actually quite difficult. But then, yeah, he just bailed out. I wasn't too impressed with that decision, at least.
Yeah,
from Ding's point of view.
Cool. So lots of positive for Gukesh. Very intriguing to see how Ding is going to handle this painful loss. Tomorrow is a rest day. Today, you're starting the US Masters, your first open tournament, back-to-back with St. Louis Masters, which is coming immediately after. So I don't know if we're going to catch you for too many more recaps. Anyway, once again, thanks for giving us your insights, Fabi, and good luck at
you'll
the
be covering
US Masters,
right? You'll be covering it, guys.
I will attempt to cover some of the rounds, yes. So keep an eye on this if you want to see some live action with Fabi. Fabi's playing an open tournament trying to win the how do they call it? FIDE Grand Swiss Points, Grand Prix Points. What do they call it?
FIDE Circuit.
Oh my goodness, I still don't know how. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of semi-important for me. I mean, not semi-important. It's pretty important for me. It's semi-important for... Actually, it's probably not important for anyone else. But it's a strong tournament. It's a very strong tournament. I mean, the FIDE circuit itself is like three people fighting for it. I'm one of them. And
yeah.
And hopefully I can do well here.
I think
it's a very strong tournament. It's probably the like one of the strongest, if not the strongest, open tournaments in the United States. And should be interesting.
Yeah, no, I know. I would have played it myself, but Thanksgiving is quite important. I will play St. Louis Masters, so we might actually meet each other. We might even play against each other. That would be something. I have a lot of students that are traveling to North Carolina to play the US Masters. Misha is there. Grigory is there. Aryan is there as well. And the girls also. Ishik Khan. So I have a lot of students, perhaps my whole team, if I'm thinking about it close to my whole team is participating in that. So exciting event to follow, and I might be doing commentary for that one here on the C-Square channel later on today. Anyway, Fabi, once again, cheers. Go get some breakfast, get ready for a round, and I will see you in the next one. Cheers, guys.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye. Bye.